In a special Sunday edition of the show, I've got Ashley Menn here with me. We're discussing everything that happened in WWE this week. It all gets started right after this. With the hashtag Great Awakening fully underway comes the only podcast where no topics are off limits. The Truth Podcast. Question everything. Discover the truths about topics you were never taught in high school or college. Learn the uncomfortable and inconvenient truths about life, culture, and politics. It's now available on all major platforms, including iTunes and Spotify. You can also find it on Twitter at TruthPodcastQE. That's TruthPodcastQE. On Facebook at TruthPodcastQE. And also on Instagram, you guessed it, at TruthPodcastQE. You can also check out the website at truthpodcast.net. All right, so we're going to get right back to the WWE podcast in a second, but I just want to talk quickly about a product I recently came across, and it's called Mirrex, M-I-R-R-E-X. So for you guys out there, you may want to direct your female counterpart to this website. It's pretty cool. It's a makeup mirror, but it's much more than that. The company is based in Colorado, and just so you guys know, Mirrex stands for the Innovative Mirror. They're here to improve the lifestyle of individuals, and they want to take a step into the future, and that they have. They have taken the makeup mirror and turned it into a smart makeup mirror. So what's this going to do? It's going to change the way the mirrors are used. There are three levels of LED light for those last-minute face checks, and you can even charge your phone wirelessly. It also has an attachment to take that really cool, well-lighted selfie. So you guys really got to check this out. This is really, I've never seen anything like this. It's Mirrex.store, Mirrex.store. That's Mirrex.store. This is definitely one of the coolest things that I've seen, and it would make a great gift. So check out Mirrex.store today.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast. Your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast on this Sunday, October 13th, 2019. I'm back in the saddle. I know that I had some technical issues over the weekend. My laptop basically crapped the bed. Somehow got it working again. And then had to move all weekend. So I know I've been a little bit disconnected from the show. But I dropped a show earlier today. It's the NXT podcast. A few days late, I know. But with our new co-host, Chris, who's covering the NXT show every single week. He does a great job. I think you'll enjoy it. It's on this feed. It's the NXT podcast. And of course, we have the AEW podcast. So you may say, what the hell are you doing with the WWE podcast name? Well, it's a great name. It's a great domain. And I'm keeping it. So you may say this is false advertising, but we are covering all avenues of wrestling in the WWE podcast. So yeah, it's not just WWE. But if you love WWE, odds are you love other presentations of wrestling, including NXT and AEW. So check that out. We have five podcasts being released every single week. We have, obviously, this show on Sundays, which is typically a wrestling nostalgia show, but this will be moving to Saturdays where I review the Friday night SmackDown. So Saturday will be the new home for that. And then, of course, the Monday Night Raw review and wrestling nostalgia also on the plate. So it'll be a Tuesday, Wednesday double hit. And then Thursday, you're getting hit again twice with the AEW and NXT podcast. So let me repeat that again, just in case you were confused and you want to know the schedule. Tuesday is a Monday Night Raw review. Wednesday is Wrestling Nostalgia. Thursday is AEW and NXT. Two separate co-hosts that are not involved with me, so you get to not hear my voice for two shows. And then, of course, on Saturday, you will be getting the Friday Night SmackDown review. So five times a week. It's five times a week to rip a line from Booker T. So hopefully that you guys enjoy the show. And again, if you want the ads and plugs removed, And many of you asked, how do I do it? I don't want to listen to ads. Easy. You just head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast and you can get yourself an ad-free listening experience. And we have somebody who joined just over the weekend here. So I'd like to give a shout out to Bear Mia and Bun Bun. Yes. Bear, Mia, and Bun Bun, thank you so much for being a patron of the show. I hope you enjoy your ad-free experience and get yourself a shout on the show. Join the family, guys. It's growing, and I appreciate everybody who's on that and exclusive content coming. More videos are coming. As I said, you know, over the weekend, it was just like insanity, right? I had to move, and we all know moving is one big giant pain in the ass. That's just what it is, right? It's just the nature of the beast. It was no fun. You got to pick up your life and move. Not for a bad reason. Nothing terrible happening. Just one of those life changes that we made. And so, yeah, you realize how much crap you have when you have to move it. So that was a whole lot of fun over the past few days. And we're still not done. But finding time for you guys. I did not want to jump off ship too long because I'm trying to connect with you guys as much as possible. I love doing the show. And again, we have a great show for you guys today because one of my favorite co-hosts, they're all my favorites. Like having three kids. How do you pick one, right? Ashley joins me and we talk about, like a whole slew of things. I could talk for 6 hours to this girl and she's awesome. We talked about the whole Tyson Fury and Braun Strowman thing. We talked about Bayley's heel turn, Hell in a Cell, the disaster that was, Shorty Gable, Charlotte being busted up, Kofi Kingston, who suddenly doesn't care that he lost the WWE championship, Kane Velasquez and his debut in WWE. And as a little bit of a hook, at the end of the show, there's breaking news that came through and we experienced it live together. Now, did it immediately hit the newswire the second that we were talking? Maybe not, but we both discovered it at the same, well, she discovered it and then we stopped our conversation and halted as she delivered this news. And you may hear a cuss word from me or two. So if you want a little bit of explicit content, you might want to scroll all the way to the end there. It was a very, very tense, heated, and real emotional reaction to the news that we got. So just take a listen towards the end of the show, and I think you'll enjoy it. If not, maybe disagree with me, but it was passionate. I'll just say that. It was definitely a very heated response. So really looking forward to that. And again, guys, if you want more content like this that's ad-free, head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast. So alrighty. Well, with all that out of the way, and you guys know where you can reach me, I don't even need to tell you where you can find me. That's absolutely everywhere. And I want to thank everybody who's helping this show grow. The highest we've hit so far is rank 14 on the WWE for the WWE podcast on the Apple Podcast brand under wrestling. So that's a pretty cool deal. And as we pump out more shows and you guys continue to listen and rate and review the show like you do, it'll just keep growing. And I want to thank you guys for doing that. So without any further ado, enough talking. Just get to the damn conversation. Well, I'm going to. And here it is. So guys, I'll be back as a reminder Tuesday with your Monday Night Raw review as the draft. Oh, and don't worry, we cover a ton of that at the beginning of the show. We talk about that for probably like 20 minutes. But the draft part two is going to be covered Tuesday. You guys know the schedule for the rest of the week. So here's Ashley and me. Enjoy the conversation. I'll talk to you next time. All right, it's Sunday night, and typically that means a wrestling nostalgia show, but in light of, well, me moving and picking up my life and doing that all weekend, and the fact that WWE has moved Friday night and made it SmackDown Friday night, guess what? We're moving our show to Sunday, probably Saturday, but again, on a very special week of just insanity, I moved it to Sunday. And today, we have Ashley Mann back to join with us and talk about the draft, talk about The Fiend, talk about just the good and the bad and everything that happened this week in WWE. So Ashley, it's awesome, and I'm really happy to be able to talk to you this week, and it's great to have you back on the show.
Yes, it's so great to be back, Mac. Thank you for having me, man. What a night on Friday. What a night.
Yeah. Well, it really was a good night, and we just talked off the air, as we always do, about some of the picks that were laughable Some of the picks that the announcers tried to make, and everybody, even the Fox executives, which, oh, don't worry, we'll get to that. We'll talk about the war room and all this stuff that is just, it's laughable. At the same time, I know what they're trying to do. So, I mean, honestly, Ashley, normally I would pick a topic here. I'm gonna give it to you. I want you to tell me the first thing that's on your mind from this week.
Honestly, I just want to go straight to the draft and or Friday night in general and just start there, because I think that's where the bulk of at least the events for the past few days. And I think a major talking point from this past week in itself is Friday night in the draft and just how things went, how they could have gone, the spoilers, I guess, that they released themselves before the show. I'm not sure if you caught that on Twitter or not, but just so many things about it. The war room. It's just so many things. So many things.
The war room. I mean,
the war room. Let's start with the war room.
Let's start with the war room, because I honestly, listen, I know that they are trying to make it feel as if it's a sports simulation and more sports like and authentic, and I appreciate that. I like that. I like that they are trying to, because for so long fans have been saying it doesn't seem real. It's, you know, oh, fake, whatever. And there's no feel of true competition, and there's no feel that a real sport brings you, say the NFL, MLB, whatever. And I appreciate the fact that, look, they're on Fox, one of the biggest sports networks in the United States, in the world, and they are trying to mimic a typical draft that you would see in the NFL or whatever. But to have these executives on USA and on Fox, who were supposed to believe that both are very knowledgeable and educated in what a good pick and a bad pick would be from a professional wrestling standpoint, it's just straight out laughable. I don't know what you thought about this.
Oh, so when I first saw it, I was very hopeful. I was like, yeah, that's so cool. That makes sense, especially with the whole Fox versus USA Network feel going behind it. I was like, finally, at least with this draft, we have something that kind of makes sense. Now there's a true reason why one brand would want dominance over the other, because it makes sense. Now there's one network vying to have better ratings and more viewers than the other one. So it may not be the best answer, but it made sense. So when I first saw the war room, I was like, okay, cool. That could be fun. Like, that makes sense. Like, you know, if they're really trying to hype this up, like it's a live broadcast, totally works. I'm digging it. And then it was just over the top. Like, they just took it and like a good idea and just like went far left as far as they could. Like, just the over the top reactions, just like jumping up and down. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but like, the whole point in a draft is you make the pick that you're going to get. It's not a gamble. It's not like I'm going to hope to get Roman Reigns and that's going to be my pick, but I don't know for sure until it's officially announced. Like, especially at least in WWE, like, it's a given. Like, you make the pick, like, that's your pick. So for them to be reacting like so over the top, like, it's just like, well, that was your choice. I can see why you would be disappointed if you were like, oh, like, if, for instance, like, if you're USA and they see that Fox got Roman Reigns, be like, oh yeah, I could see why they would be upset. So that was just one thing that really stuck out to me. It's just like, God, just doesn't make any sense. Like, you made that pick yourself.
Right. That's a good point. This is not a gamble. This is not a chance. This is just make your pick. Yes, it was over the top. And they were jumping up and down for picking Lucha House Party or the Viking
yes.
Raiders. It's you gotta be kidding me.
The details and like the rules we'll get into like in depth later on. But yeah, like that pick, I was like, come on, come on.
Unbelievable. And oh, don't forget that Monday Night Raw chose Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross separately using two of their picks instead of a single pick. What are the
right.
like if you got I mean, you got to be joking me. I don't know. So I'm going to stop right there with that. But yeah, overall, like it was a over the top reaction for things that they should not have been. Oh, my God. It's like they won the lottery every single time they made their pick and got their pick. Well, you made your pick, so you're going to get your pick. It was very corny at times. I again, to give them credit where credit is due, I appreciate that they tried. I just think.
Yeah, it was a good idea.
Yeah,
it was a very good idea. And it had so much potential.
It did. It was just executed poorly, and they just again take it all the way into just, you know, fantasy land and go, oh, okay, well, this is WWE's version of a draft, not a true
right.
draft. And then you have the Fox executives who are throughout the show, like you normally would with any draft or any sports broadcast. You have like Alex Rodriguez, David Ortiz, Terry Bradshaw. You know, you have these guys, Tiki Barber, who are out there and going – talking about how, you know, basically they don't know anything about wrestling. Like that, if you took anything from their little segues, they know nothing about wrestling.
And their draft picks were wrestlers from 20 years ago.
that's exactly my point. They have no idea who and what today's product is. So they go back to Andre, they go back to Hulk, they go back to Iron Sheik, they go back to a time of, you know, an infinity ago, what, 30 years ago, that clearly they have no idea what it is today. And I'm sure when the cameras go off, they're rolling their eyes going, oh my god, I can't believe we're doing this. Like, you know that they aren't true wrestling fans and it's just a joke to them.
And, which is fine. Like, they don't have to like it, but being a partner now on that network, they are responsible and it is their job to promote whatever shows are on the network. So if at any time in WWE there is a moment when you should script something, this should be it. Give them exactly what you want them to read off. That's what you need to do, then you prevent everything from, if we're taking it back a few weeks to when I don't know the announcer's name or the commentator's name, but when he referred to Rey Mysterio as the Nacho Libre guy, like you could prevent all this from happening and actually make yourself look like a legit and sports brand being on this network. So, oh, it's just so many things.
Oh God. And look, I mean, we've seen drafts before. We actually just had a draft not too long ago there are never any tried and true consistent ways that WWE does their drafts ever. I mean, sometimes it's Vince McMahon out there making the picks on behalf of, you know, the general manager. Sometimes it's two general managers out there at once making their pick for their respective brands. But to us to believe that it's the network executives that are ones pulling the strings and making the decisions is just, it's just flat out wrong. I understand the war room, but why weren't there any faces of WWE, unless I missed it because I was just getting fed up with seeing the war room, is having Eric Bischoff there, having Paul Heyman there, have a face of WWE that, hey guys, like, yeah, these are the networks we're on, but maybe we should get some input from the guys and gals that are working in the WWE that have, you know, management level attributes to actually have an input in our picks. And maybe maybe they're on the phone in a conference. Well, I don't know.
And honestly, that's what I thought that they were going to do. I thought this would be the perfect opportunity. I actually talked to my friends about it. I thought, because I was wondering, like, who was going to make the picks themselves, because obviously they've done away with general managers and, like, quote, authority figures, especially with Shane McMahon being fired for right now. So I was very curious to see who was going to actually make the picks. And so I figured this would be a perfect time to have Eric Bischoff come out. Like, just imagine that. Like, people would be so, well, I can't speak for the majority, but I would have been excited to see Eric Bischoff come out, stand at the podium and make the picks, and then have Paul Heyman come out for the Raw side and just vice versa. And not saying that I want them to be on air characters going forward in that respective role, but at least for tonight, it would have made the perfect sense. Like, since WWE themselves put out a release when both of these individuals were hired or promoted to that position, it's not like it's just something that, like, us insider or hardcore fans know. They released it themselves, so it would make perfect sense to have them come out and respectfully represent each brand. But they just didn't, and they had Stephanie come out, and that was just like, that was just so lackluster. Like, and she was just reading through, like, a group, like, each, like, I get the round idea, that kind of makes sense, but she just went through, like, a handful at each time, so it's not even like we got to see the each individual's wrestlers react to either moving to a different brand or staying on the brand or whatever. So it was just, man, like, it was just so many things that they just could have done differently and should have. Yeah, in my opinion.
And again, it's just, I think, a microcosm of the larger issue that WWE has on a consistent basis is just overproducing, overbooking everything. Even they're booking a draft that's overbooked. I mean, you saw it at Hell in a Cell, and I haven't even talked to you about that with that whole conundrum of finale. And now that I can't believe I just thought of it with everything else going on with the draft. So we'll talk about that for sure. But that's just an example of them overthinking and overproducing everything. Keeping it simple is the way to go for most of what you need to do. And Stephanie McMahon coming out there and you know, basically asking for booze, and people are
right,
honestly,
yeah,
like looking at her going, Stephanie, like, we don't even have the energy to boo you anymore.
And so, which should have been a huge red flag,
yes,
to them in the back. I hope it was.
Oh, yeah.
Because even if a McMahon can't get booed, then you know something's wrong.
I think people
come on,
just,
and it's Stephanie.
Yeah, it's Stephanie, and I
and
think
it's not like you had Vince go out there. It's Stephanie,
right? And thank God for Vince, because Vince McMahon, as of late, is just I don't know. Ever since the last few years, 3, 4, 5 years, he just doesn't seem right on the mic or in the ring. I think it's just age getting to him. He's just not as sharp anymore. And look, he's 70 some years old. So yes, Stephanie out there and pretending that every pick and furthermore. You have the pre-show team with Samoa Joe and Renee Young and Booker T, who is just – honestly, I want somebody to just follow Booker T around and write a transcript for everything he says every time he's out there. He puts sentences together that I've never heard put together that make no sense. Having him on commentary, it was like I hated him on commentary, but at the same time, it was just so awful. It was like watching a car wreck. Sometimes you had to see it. So having him out there, but look, everybody on that team, of course, nobody's going to put anybody down as a terrible pick. Everything everyone did was a great pick. It was a great selection.
Oh, yeah,
like,
of course.
It's just not real, and I understand that they can't undermine their own guys and gals. I get it. But at the same time, if this was a true draft, you would have criticism. You would have people second-guessing picks. Instead, they're well-balanced, or, you know, awesome pick by Raw, awesome pick SmackDown. What are they supposed to say? I don't know.
And this would have been the time, and I think that's why I was kind of hoping they would have spaced out each pick, kind of like what they did. I don't know if it was the first ever draft that they did, or maybe the second. I don't know. Back in its infancy, when all the wrestlers were sitting backstage, and I remember this one moment specifically because it was a huge deal to me. The Dudley Boys had ended up getting drafted separately. Bubba went to Raw, and D-Von went to SmackDown. And just seeing their look and the devastation, knowing that they're no longer going to be a team and that they got broken up and just everything, like, it just, like, it enhanced the emotion behind it and just really drove home the idea of the draft. And that's just what we were missing. Like, I was hoping, especially now with them wanting to go with a more sports-like vibe, this would have been a time to, okay, if you're going to choose whomever, have a picture of them come up. If you can't show them backstage for whatever reason, and just give them a brief bio, just top 3-4 bullet points like they do when the wrestlers are making their entrance. But this would have been a good time to, yeah, if you are drafting a Lucha House Party, yeah, I probably wouldn't have chosen them nowhere near as highly as they were chosen, but at least put up a few facts so at least there's something like, all right, yeah, I probably wouldn't have chosen this high, but at least I know that they've done this, and this. So just again, like just something that I hope they tweak for Monday, because we still have a second half to this thing.
Yes, we do. I just thought about it as well. We still have part two of this. And I mean, I don't really know why they only made 30 candidates available now, 30 candidates available on Monday. I don't know. I mean, I know they're trying to make it a 2-day event and start it off hot on SmackDown on Friday. I get that. I'm sure that it'll continue Monday night. And I know Roman Reigns is available. He'll probably be the number one pick he was picked on SmackDown this past week.
Mm-hmm.
But it's another candidate. Seth Rollins, yeah.
Yes, that whole draft pool in and of itself was completely confusing because I had no idea. Like, I saw the release that they put out, and unless I missed it, the only one that I read just gave like a breakdown of how many superstars are going to be drafted, but I guess I didn't realize that each show is going to have only like a certain select, like a, not even amount, but just certain superstars for each show. So I had no idea. So when I see Becky Lynch, I'm like, all right, yeah, that makes sense, whatever. And then Roman Reigns, okay, it makes sense. But then I'm like, wait, what? Like, I think it was the OC that was picked third. I'm like, wait, where's Brock? Where's Seth? Like, uh-huh. So I had to go back on Twitter and be like, oh, okay, well, yeah, I guess that makes sense then, because you can only choose this certain, like, group of people. But then I'm like, well, wait a minute. So as the picks go on, I'm like, this list that I'm referencing, which is their pool of available superstars, is literally the exact list of the superstars that they're choosing in the exact order. Like, did you see that list that was out there?
No, I didn't.
So they released, I think it was either the WWE on Fox account or one of WWE's like verified accounts released the rules. Like there's 3 bullet points, and then separately there is these 2 lists. One list that's going to be the pool for superstars available on SmackDown, and then a separate list that's available on Raw. Well, once I was confused as to why the OC was chosen before, oh, I don't know, Brock Lesnar, and I went on Twitter to try to figure out what was going on, I found this list. And I'm like, well, wait. once we got to the fifth one, I was like, something's not right. Like, this list that they released, their pool, is literally the exact order that they're revealing on as the show is going on. So, Matt, sure enough, at the end of the show, the exact list that they released is the order that they announced on the show. Yeah, I was blown away. Now, hopefully it generated enough buzz so they at least change it on Monday. But God, when I saw that, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. You're a $1 billion company. How?
It's the details like this that just get overlooked, that people don't care. I mean, that is egregious. I mean, you can't – that is right there a believability killer. Like, you can't do this. Like, that's inexcusable to do that, because – I mean, if it was verbatim, line by line, in order in which they were picked, that is
literally.
I mean, that
literally. I did not know after that. After the show, I'll go back and find it and tag you on it. But please. Yeah, it was literally the exact list, because I was like, this is so weird. Like, something's not right. And I was like, you've got to be freaking kidding me, man. Like, wow. All right. So we'll see how Mondays turn out. But they've got to at least tweak a few of them come Monday, so it's not the exact same as Friday. But yeah, I was just blown away.
Yeah, if they do that again Monday, I mean, jeez. Well, please tag me on that. I want to go on a rant. Maybe if I see that, I'll switch on the mic and just go off. I'm telling you.
You probably will.
It's like that kind of stuff I can't tell. But yeah, so I mean, overall though, looking at this in part one as a whole, I mean, yeah, it's evenly balanced, I guess. I mean, yes, Raw gets three picks for every SmackDown's two because of the extra hour. We understand that. And they were picked about in the way that you would expect people to be picked for the majority of it. I would have put Kevin Owens a little bit higher up, to be honest with you, and not have him go in the third round, which was surprising. I probably would have put him above Bobby Lashley of all freaking people. He was picked – yeah, so Kevin Owens was picked in the third round. Bobby Lashley was picked in the second round. I mean, it's just like – you know, I don't know. So something like that really speaks to where Kevin Owens is. All this was is a standing of how WWE views their talent. That's all this is. That's all the draft is is a public showing of how WWE internally views the importance and overness, I guess, for lack of a better term, of their talent. That's all this is.
It's like its own form of a slammies in a way. It's like you now have the badge of being the number one like draft pick of all time, like of each show. Like Becky Lynch is already bragging about being the number one draft pick, which is cool, like rightfully so, but it's just like,
and she was the number one draft pick the last time we had this draft. The number one well, female draft pick. I don't know if she was the number one. Yes, she was. So she gets drafted to Raw, and she can claim that she was the number one pick for both drafts. So I mean, rightfully so. I'm fine with Becky Lynch. She's super over. I'm fine with it. I have no problem with her being the number one overall pick. And Roman Reigns as the SmackDown number one overall pick. What would you expect? I mean, really.
Right.
So. Well, before we get to the Hell in a Cell, which I want to talk to you after this next topic, is Bayley. Bayley,
yes,
finally, truly turned, slaughtered the Bayley buddies in very dramatic fashion, which I loved. I don't know if she's listening to this show or if WWE is just listening to the overall vibe of the audience of saying, hey, Bayley is super stale. Like, we don't feel anything for Bayley. We haven't felt anything for Bayley since she debuted. I mean, seriously, they have completely destroyed her. For the most part, she's had some nice moments, but in the general scheme of how that she has been presented and the storyline she's been in, the terrible storyline she's been in with Sasha Banks, and her not being able to translate properly over to the main roster, I would give her overall career since NXT like a C- or a D. Now she gets a second chance at life. She has been brought back as what I wanted to see, although I'd like to see like a leather jacket or something, but hell, they have got 90% of the way of what I wanted to see with Bayley. She comes out, tears down the Bayley buddies, defeats Charlotte Flair, is now again the SmackDown Women's Champion, and we have, of course, another short title reign. I'm not a fan of it, but in this case, I'm willing to make that sacrifice for a heel Bayley. Then she comes on and says, and I'll just say it, she said that, well, let me get word for word. She said, listen, bitches, I think. She said, you can kiss my ass. All of you can kiss my ass. I'm almost pretty sure that that's exactly what she said. I loved it. I think it was awesome. I would like more of an explanation, which I'm sure we'll get, but I love the haircut. Her attire was a little bit different. Her music is certainly different if you listened at the end. Mm-hmm. I'm A-plus all the way around on this. How do you feel?
Dude, I am so here for it. The second she came out and I saw that hoodie, I was like, what is she wearing? Like, this is kind of odd. And then I was like, oh, something's going on. And man, when I saw the haircut, I was like, say it isn't so. And dude, when she tore down those Bailey buddies, I was so happy. So happy. It made me forget about everything draft related and just all the nonsense that I just watched for 2 hours. It was perfect. And like you, like I was, normally I would be very upset about a short title run, especially with it being Charlotte's 10th reign and only lasting a week. Like I would have, you know, had some feelings about that. But man, like this was so well done. The only thing I may have probably would have tweaked a little bit would be when Bailey ran down to the ring and they started the match, like just had her be so aggressive right off the bat and just get in a good like stiff shots on Charlotte just to kind of drive home the character change. But man, like I'm just so, so happy that they finally pulled the trigger and just actually visually let us embrace the change besides just a like a low blow or something that's common and that pretty much anyone can do. This was different. This was a dramatic statement. She literally cut off her trademark, which is that ponytail. She sliced those Bailey buddies down all the way down and knocked them off the stage. Like it was perfect. In that one shot of, I think it was the green Bailey buddy just falling on her head and just falling off. Like it was just so poetic. Like it was just so well done. I'm here for it. And I can't wait to hear her first actual promo next week.
There's no going back. And I could see that. I mean, they are fully committed now. You cannot have her go back. They clearly have a plan. I hope they do. I've been waiting for this for over a year or more. I think this is more well overdue, but welcome. I am so about this. And yes, seeing that Bailey buddy fall on her head you can just see that as a GIF coming. I mean, on like Twitter or something. Like some like you know, you can see some kind of meme coming from that. And look, it's a perfect symbolic destruction of who she was, and that's exactly what they did. She came out, and as you said, with the hoodie. I said, "What the heck? What is this? You know, like that's something's not right here."
Right.
She changes expression from her typical, you know, happy-go-lucky face, all you know, down to just a neutral kind of nasty smile, and I loved it. Destroys the Bailey buddies. Everything about this, you know, was great. You know, if there was a tweak, maybe it would have been that. You know, natural selection wasn't no-sold, and then all of a sudden she just rolled up. I mean, like, you know, that kind of thing. Like, all of a sudden she just no-sells it. I mean, she got a hit. I mean, Charlotte executed it perfectly, and all of a sudden, you know, Bailey just pops up and rolls her up and whatever. But fine, look, I'm willing to look through all of that because of how important this turn is and how excited I am for seeing her as a SmackDown Women's Champion, being dominant, being nasty, doing anything to win, coming at the audience saying, I've been in your corner for how many years and you guys haven't supported me. Like there's ways to go about this that she can totally blame the audience. I want to see and hear her go a curse once in a while because that's
just
so
be nasty.
Yeah. Just be a total, you know what?
Yeah.
Like, I want Bailey to do that and just see what she has because I think it's there. And I think that this is legitimately going to cause some girls and probably little boys to cry. Apparently there was something out there about that.
There
was something about a little boy or something that like lost his mind because Bailey did this. Like that's what I love. Like WWE should not shy away from that. This is not Blue's Clues. Like this is professional wrestling, and damn it, sometimes this needs to happen.
With the hashtag Great Awakening fully underway comes the only podcast where no topics are off limits. The Truth Podcast. Question everything. Discover the truths about topics you were never taught in high school or college. Learn the uncomfortable and inconvenient truths about life, culture, and politics. It's now available on all major platforms, including iTunes and Spotify. You can also find it on Twitter at TruthPodcastQE. That's TruthPodcastQE. On Facebook at Truth Podcast QE, and also on Instagram, you guessed it, at Truth Podcast QE. You can also check out the website at truthpodcast.net.
And I think one of the things that I love the most about it, well, two. The first short one is the follow-up. Last week, she was devastated. She was emotionally and visibly distraught after her loss. it took her a good amount of time to make it to the back. We saw Charlotte walk by her with the title on. Bayley's just sitting on the floor, just looking up at her, just so devastated that she lost. And she finally snapped. Like, literally, she snapped this week. And it's just so refreshing to see at least one storyline just pay off, besides The Fiend and all that stuff. But just something actually go consistent from one week to the next and just have some type of resolution and progression for the weeks to come. Like, something that actually makes sense. Like, Bayley lost last week, lost to Charlotte, came out this week, snapped, changed her character, did what she needed to do to regain her title. And now, which leads into my second point, this is like a completely different run. It kind of, in a weird way, makes you forget that she was just champion, because this is a completely different Bayley as champion. She is, hopefully, if they stay the course, going to be this just vindictive champion, this you-know-what, just wanting to prove her dominance and prove her worth on the brand. And I'm curious to see, now that Sasha is officially on SmackDown, unless they change it on Monday, how long it takes for them to square off against each other. And if Sasha, which she has to be at this point with both of them, but Sasha becoming the babyface and all this.
She could. I mean, I think they kind of dropped the ball a little bit with Sasha and her run as heel, because she came back hot as hell, and then they just let her go out there every week, and oh, this is, you know, Sasha's back, and they took her off the mic, which is what took a lot of the steam away from her heel run, and it ended up really cooling off by the time she squared up with Becky Lynch. But maybe they end up as a team. Maybe it is another turn by Sasha, where the fans start to, you know, go with Sasha because of how nasty Bayley is. I don't know, but yes, this is basically a second chance at life for Bayley. Like, I, as you said, I really forgot that she was SmackDown Women's Champion at times. She became like the wallpaper in the room. You just kind of forget it's there. And I didn't want to feel like that with the SmackDown Women's Championship on SmackDown. That is the top championship for the women that's available on that brand, and it became lost in the sauce. Like, I forgot it was there. Oh, Bayley's champion. It didn't feel like anything. Now she has a mission. Now she has something she's fighting for, whatever that may be. We'll find out. I'm all about this. I'm willing to give it a chance, and I hope there's a long-term plan here in place, and it's not just week to week. We'll see what happens. We're committed to this, hopefully for 6+ months. I don't want to see a 1-2-month, 3-month title reign out of Bayley. I want it to go to WrestleMania or maybe beyond. One small side note is, I wonder if Charlotte can ever have a match in which she doesn't get her mouth busted open. I mean, is it possible?
You know, now that you say that, I just got that visual, like, as soon as you said it, of just her with either bloody nose or a bloody lip. Just always. That's so, you're so right.
Every time.
Oh, man. That's great.
I don't know what it is. It does part of it, and she's not purposely trying it for it. Right. But every single time, her lip's swollen, you know, her nose is slightly, you know, tweaked or something. Like, I'm looking, did she knock out a tooth or lips busted? Something. I don't know what it is. If it's
those flares, man. They're easy bleeders.
Yeah, they do. Oh, they do bleed very well. I'll tell you. I mean, oh, my God. The images skin. Of Rick soaked in blood with that bleach blonde hair.
Right.
It's a great visual. Overall, I love it. I really hope that they have long-term plans, and the follow-up's the key, and follow-through and long-term planning here. Moving on here just a little bit is, and let's just get to it because I have this on my list. If I don't talk about this, I don't want to miss it. Hell in a Cell. I know we haven't had a chance to talk, and I know that it was last a week ago now, but I just got to ask you, because yes, Sasha and yes, Becky, I think, had a hell of a match. I really enjoyed their Hell in a Cell match. I've talked about that. And I've also talked about the just utter disaster that was the main event, that was critically panned. I mean, it was awful by the audience and attendance, Twitter. People aren't softening on this and looking back going, oh, well, you know, it's not so bad. No, people hated it. So what did you think about the Hell in a Cell main event in your world?
Oh, my gosh. Where do I start? So I can't remember being so let down by a finish in quite some time. And it wasn't even – I'm not going to say it wasn't, but – the majority of my disappointment wasn't because of the whether you want to call it a DQ or if it's an officially called a not or a stoppage by the referee. I think that's the official ruling for it right now. Referee stoppage. Yeah, is
stoppage,
that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So why that match warrants a stoppage as opposed to every other Hell in a Cell match that has been in existence is beyond me. But my biggest thing is how the hell do you beat the Fiend in the future? This guy, just visually, everything that was stacked on top of him, chairs, ladders, a toolbox, he got hit with a sledgehammer, he got hit in the face with a chair, like all these things that Seth did to him. I don't even remember the exact count of the stomps that he withstood, but it's just all these things. And for him to not be like no movement, no nothing to the point where the referee needed to stop the match. Okay. I'm not happy. But honestly, I didn't expect a clean victory one way or another. So I figured something was going to be fishy at the end of the match, but I didn't expect it to be this type of cluster. But just to see the Fiend go through all this and then within seconds, maybe a minute, jump up and hit the mandible claw on Seth like nothing happened, and then Seth have all this blood just pouring out of him. Like, what? That's my biggest thing, because, yes, if you don't want to put the title on him right now, that's fine. You shouldn't have booked the match to begin with, but whatever, fine, you did. Now you have to get out of it. Fine. But how do you beat him going forward? Like, that's my thing, because how you're going to hit, like, a few finishing moves and beat him 1, 2, 3? Like, that's my concern going forward, is, like, he just went through all this on Sunday, and for what? And the thing that's most telling, I think, out of all this is the fact that they did not address it once on Monday or on SmackDown. Yes, the Fiend came out and attacked Seth, but they didn't address the horrible finish on Sunday at all. And the fact that cancel your network or whatever it was phrased was trending on Sunday for I don't even know how many hours. It's just, oh my gosh. So many things with that one. So many things.
I feel it. I mean.
And like, it was at the point where, I'm sorry, it was at the point where on Monday, like, or on Sunday especially, but like on Monday, like, I didn't even want to see the Fiend. Like, I'm happy we didn't. Like, I didn't even care. Like, I didn't want to see him come out. Like, you took all the fun out of it. All the fun. Like, you didn't need to book the match to begin with. Now you ruined Seth. Like, poor Seth. With past 6, 7, 8 months for him has been horrible. So it's just a nightmare. It's I'm glad they're, I'm pretty sure they're on separate brands now. I'm pretty sure the Fiend went to SmackDown, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, the Fiend did, and hopefully Seth Rollins goes to Raw. I don't know, but look, yeah, when they announced this match, I said, I was even uncomfortable when they first announced it, because I go, how are they going to get out of this? You can't have Seth lose clean. You sure as hell can't have the Fiend lose clean. There's got to be something that they have up their sleeve. And, oh, they had something up their sleeve in the event of a 11-stomp pedigree, chairs, ladders, tables, sledgehammer, and Hell in a Cell. I mean, they took everything and threw it at this match, and that's the problem. On top of the fact that you add in that what makes the Fiend so damn special is you don't see him so much. He is not built. His character is not built for a 15-20-minute match. It is built for a 5-10-minute match. Get him the hell out of there and leave. The length of this match was almost as sinful as the actual finish itself, because it's the opposite of what makes the Fiend awesome. I know they're trying to maximize how long he's on the screen, but you're actually doing more damage by doing that. And yeah, the finish with 11 stomps was just terrible. I mean, I know what they're going for, that he's this superhuman monster-like nightmare that can't be put down. But there reaches a point where even the most ardent of fans, the ones that stick around through all of the good and the bad and are with you for the ride, roll their eyes and go, this is just not believable. Like, you have taken me out of the moment. I am not even in the moment anymore, because you guys have gone way beyond anything that's like, okay, like, come on. Really? 11 stomps, and you're going to take it. Yeah.
And one of the worst things about it is, okay, so this is the very next show after your debut night on Fox, where you gain millions of viewers, all these new eyes, this new network, all this hype going into Hell in a Cell. Granted, it only had, I think, 3, maybe 4 officially announced matches on the card. Yeah, they added some later on, whatever, but this was your main event to that pay-per-view after your Fox debut. And this is the type of finish that, great, like the idea of going to Fox, obviously, and at the end of the day, would be to generate more network subscribers as well. Because the whole idea is you move to a new network, new people see you, they like your product, they order the network to see Hell in a Cell. So let's say someone did that, and then this is the type of finish that they see. Like, what the hell is this? Like, why would I stay tuned? I would be like, yeah, if I was just a football fan or just one of those people that they were trying to get, and I tune in and I see this because I'm on my free trial, and I see this, I'm like, no, there's no way. There's no way. And then I'm done, and I'm checked out. Like, that was their moment to make a big impact, more so maybe that night than on Fox, because even if people didn't tune in, that word would have gone around, and then maybe that next week on SmackDown you could follow up and there'd be more hype, and they just blew it.
It was, again, I talked about a few minutes ago, the most overproduced, overbooked segment that I've seen from WWE in the longest time. And they put themselves in this position. I don't think that Seth and Bray should have been anywhere near each other for the next 4 months. I mean, like, well, let's wait on that. And clearly that they wanted this match, and it made no sense to put them together at this time. It was way too soon. And we all knew that this match neither could afford a clean loss. So they go with the stoppage. And I was afraid that there would be some kind of finish like this because there's no other way out of it. I thought maybe Braun Strowman was going to interfere. Apparently, he doesn't care that he was attacked by the Fiend. That just got thrown by the wayside. I mean, really. Like, he attacks Legends. When you attack Legends, you just, and they're not able to, you know, compete anymore, you just go, well, that's that. You know, they're not coming back. But with Braun Strowman, who has a hairpin trigger, gets put down with the mandible claw by Bray Wyatt, a former team member, a former family member, and then he just kind of, well, you know, it happens. Like, I mean, you don't even get any acknowledgement from him. It was just amazing that got forgotten. But yeah, this whole thing from start to finish, on top of the red light that was draped across the entire ring, which I know the effect they're going for, but that was, to me, it was distracting after a while, and maybe I wouldn't have hated it so much had the match been a lot shorter and booked not so stupid, for lack of a better term. I mean, I think that maybe that's also a part of it, but this whole thing, and yeah, you had the Fiend out there, the crowd turning on the whole thing was awesome, chanting AEW, we want a refund, I mean, you name it.
Yeah,
they were all, I loved that, the audience in that, in the crowd there, they couldn't,
I'm so proud.
It was awesome. I was sitting at home, like, shaking my head, like, thank you. This is awesome. Like, and it was awesome to hear, and that WWE can actually, you know, hey, there is an AEW chant out there. There's an AEW audience out there, and people are aware that there's a second place to go here for work. And but yeah, overall, this was a disaster. We all know it was. And WWE was very smart in not mentioning a damn thing about it on Raw other than a quick video recap, not bringing Seth out, not bringing Bray Wyatt out. That was honestly the only thing they could do. The only smart thing they could do was nothing. Just don't do anything. Pretend this never happened. And that is the way to go with this, because you can't repair. You can't do anything that will make the crowd not boo. So let's not do anything.
Yeah, and exactly. That's exactly what I was about to say. They had to ignore it the night after, which it was kind of an easy out. You can say that not that they had to, obviously, but in the back of our minds, we could be thinking, okay, like, the Fiend is that beat up, whatever. But Seth was like literally like had blood pouring out of his mouth. So it makes sense why he wouldn't be there. So you shouldn't be expecting either one of them the night after everything went down. But I think, and then I was wondering if they were ever going to address it after the fact, because I figured the Fiend may be sent over to Raw or SmackDown. And I think what we saw on Friday is closure for them, at least for now. The Fiend coming out, dragging Seth under the ring, kind of closing that chapter and then moving on. So I hope they keep them apart for quite some time.
There's just no need. There's no need for this right now. They don't belong. They are paralleling right now each other, and they don't need to cross each other for a long time. I mean, these guys are both on the ascent. You just established Seth Rollins as your guy by slaying a monster and a beast and a king and all these funny things that, you know, all these names that he comes up with for all of the different wrestlers, and that's fine, and I get it, and they're great marketing tools and all that, but he literally just beat the top guys in the business. You don't need him going against the hottest thing in the business right now when it just started, and you don't put him in that match right away. That's something, a again, Royal Rumble, maybe. Maybe even Elimination Chamber or beyond that. But it was just way too soon. They were on similar paths and not ones that needed to be crossed. And then you add in, hey, terrible finish, a misuse of finishers, an overuse of finishers, overbooking, overproduced, terrible lighting, really unnecessarily long match that took away from the feel and mystique of The Fiend. And you add it all up and it's a big fat F. I mean, that's all you have to say about it. Unfortunately, it is. Yeah. I mean, the best thing about that match, the best thing, and I said this earlier this week, was the entrance of Bray Wyatt, which is still badass.
Yep. Like,
that was the best part of the entire match.
And I love that they kept the lantern. There was some rumors going around that people in WWE thought it was too scary, or people were complaining that it was too scary or whatever. But I'm happy they let him keep that.
So let me get this straight. WWE's okay with, you know, infidelity and, you know, cheating wives live on television, but we can't have a scary lamp out there. Yeah, I mean, like, let's get this straight here. I mean, come on. Like, so if you're going to talk about the cardinal sins, right, but apparently that's okay, but you can't have a lamp that might scare the kids. I mean, seriously. So, all right, well, let's move on to something else, and something equally – I don't know if it's equally bad, depending on your perspective, is Kofi Kingston lost last week in 9 seconds to Brock Lesnar and comes face-to-face with Cain Velasquez. Haven't talked to you since then, but also this week on SmackDown, Kofi Kingston comes out like, you know, hey, he just had his third child born, or he just came from the hospital, and or he just won the lottery, and nothing's wrong, and everything he struggled to get, well, it was taken away last week, but I'm out here to throw pancakes. That's what I'm here for. That's what WWE pays me to do. So Kofi Kingston's back on the horse of the New Day, and really just forgotten as WWE champion. What do you think about Cain Velasquez, Brock winning in 9 seconds, and Kofi's reaction?
Wow. So... It was time for Kofi to lose. I was surprised that he was just squashed like that in however many seconds it was. I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but I was, because I just was expecting him to get in at least a little bit of offense, maybe like land a punch, or I don't know. I don't really know what I was expecting, but I figured he was going to lose. Brock's the champion. Good stuff. Kane comes out. At first, I honestly didn't recognize him until they zoomed in. I was like, oh, wow. Okay, so I'm not really that thrilled about it. I mean, Kane is very good. I'm looking forward to this one more than looking forward to the Strowman-Fury fight. Just because Kane is – we've seen Kane in wrestling matches. He is pretty decent. Like, he can do a lot of the Lucha moves and stuff like that. So he's – he looks like he can actually do the bare minimum and then some. So it should be a good fight match, whatever it ends up being. But I was really surprised with how they handled Kofi this week. I thought this week they needed, since it was another well-hyped show, it wasn't as big as last week's show, obviously, but, you know, it was still a good or a well-hyped show. It's supposed to be a big show in the draft. The very first thing that we see from Kofi is him standing backstage holding the platter of pancakes with a huge smile on his face like nothing happened. Literally like nothing happened the week before. And you were just champion for 6 months. You were just doing tours all over the world, promos, interviews, how much this means to you, 11 years, all that. And then you can't even show 1 ounce of sadness or distraught, just nothing. Like, you're just back there just happy as can be. And I get, like, there was a charity that they needed to promote, but you can't tell me that they couldn't let him cut a 30-second or a minute promo somewhere in the night or before that package, just addressing the disappointment and his reaction to losing last week. You can't tell me that you couldn't have carved out any other segment and had an opportunity for him to at least address it briefly. So that killed me. That killed me with it. And not that I was the biggest Kofi fan. I was happy for him because he put in the time, all that good stuff. But again, it's just one of those things that, and at this point, yeah, what if he can cut a promo next week addressing it, that's fine, I guess. But you literally just had him running out there, smiling, just dancing, having a good time and throwing pancakes. Like, he didn't just lose the title that he fought for 11 years. So why should we be invested in him going forward if he's not even upset that he lost the title?
The answer is we shouldn't. If you don't care, if they don't care, I don't care. I mean, I was on board for the Kofi. You know, it's a feel good story, and
why he lost so soon? Yeah.
That's all right.
But like, why he lost so soon? Like, can he at least say, "Man, I had an off night." I had an off night. Like, I really wanted a chance to get a rematch. I'm gonna fight and claw. Just something. Just addressing like. You've been beating countless people, Kevin Owens, Randy Orton, all these people for the past 6 months, and then you lose in 8 seconds, 9 seconds? Like, come on, man. Just address it.
Yeah, no. It's just forgotten because it's not about Kofi Kingston anymore, and I'm sure Vince McMahon is probably going backstage and breathing a sigh of relief saying, thank God that's over. Let's move on to a real champion. I mean, you know Vince McMahon's backstage thinking that. I mean, Kofi Kingston was never a guy that – I mean, look, he was there for 11 years and Vince McMahon never decided to push him to the top until he got a fluke injury or was it – who got the fluke injury?
Ali got injured.
Yeah. He got injured in Elimination Chamber and Kofi took his place and, you know, fate is what it is and Kofi got the opportunity. And that's when the fans were like, oh, my God, this is awesome. What a great match. This is believable with Daniel Bryan. And it was a great story. And then he becomes champion and holds it for 6 months. But the whole time, it's not a matter of if Vince McMahon really wanted him. It's the audience that did. And we all went on that journey. And, you know, it's no secret that I was never a Kofi Kingston fan as WWE champion. I've made that very clear that I am not. And I still stand by that. But the fact is, if I was a Kofi fan and loved him as champion, and I didn't, but if I did, I would be super pissed that WWE doesn't have the credibility or the I don't know what word I'm searching for, but they didn't allow Kofi Kingston to acknowledge the fans and say, thank you for your support. You know, this was a journey that I went on and hopefully I'll be back someday. And thank you.
Just the decency for this run, just all the time, like literally almost a year. We're a few months shy of, I think it was in January that this whole thing started, but man, just the decency to just have a decent payoff for him. It's just sad.
It's just
regardless who it is. Like, no one deserves that.
No, and it's the same thing too when you have guys who get beat to holy hell on a pay-per-view and then they're coming out the next night or the next on Tuesday when SmackDown was on Tuesday and just walking out there like, you know, like when Kofi Kingston would come out and throw pancakes and smiling and laughing like nothing happened. It's like, well, then why am I supposed to take anything seriously that happens if you don't? And with WWE, although they've been better about injuries when they happen, where like Rey Mysterio, who's still in a sling from Brock Lesnar, I love that. Like that, yeah. That to me, like that, just little touches like that, so simple. And having Cain Velasquez out there, again, I don't have a strong feeling on Cain Velasquez from a UFC perspective. I know, and again, I followed UFC very, very lightly over the years, and I know that he was the one that defeated Brock Lesnar, and we all saw the replays, and WWE showed the graphic footage of him with his nose caved in, all that kind of stuff, and his eye that had a scar, all that. So I think that was effective. But we all know that's not what we're going to get when we put Cain Velasquez and Brock Lesnar in an actual match together. I mean, in the WWE ring, it's not going to be punches that land, that split your face open. And furthermore, and this is something Vince actually said apparently backstage, is that, hey, like, the way Cain Velasquez looks isn't exactly intimidating. I'm sorry. Like, he is a world-class athlete. He could whoop 90% of the population's ass. Like, he is a legitimate guy that has real credentials. But the fact is that when you're in WWE and, like, aesthetics matter, when he took off his shirt when he first debuted and went after Brock, if you didn't know who he was and you didn't have any background, you would have just gone, huh, this guy is taking down Brock?
At first, I thought it was Dominic. When they had that far-off shot, I was like, wow, I didn't realize Dominic was that stocky, like just that thick. And I was like, oh crap, that's not Dominic. I was like, who is that? And like, it took me a few seconds. I was like, oh wow, okay. But yeah, I had no idea at first.
No.
They did him no favors there.
Like, keep the shirt on, bro.
Keep
the shirt on, please. I mean, like, yes, I am not about Vince McMahon's, fantasy of everyone being 6'5", 280, and jacked. I don't need that. But at the same time, like, he looked like a guy that came from the audience and just took his shirt off and he was like, come on, we're going to fight. Like, he looked very pedestrian, and I don't like that. He's got a great look. He's got a great – good facials, good eyes, all that stuff. But when you get below the neck, I know all your body shaming. No, this is WWE. When you have a guy that looks like Brock Lesnar – and you have a guy that looks like Cain Velasquez, you say to yourself, how the hell did Cain Velasquez ever beat Brock Lesnar?
Well, and that's what we're programmed to think. If you're strictly a WWE fan and you know nothing of UFC, you are programmed to think a beast and a bad, you know what, looks like Brock Lesnar. And Cain Velasquez is not a Brock Lesnar. Yes, Cain Velasquez beat the you know what out of Brock, but if you aren't a UFC fan, you don't know that. So having him come out there, strip his shirt off, and get the upper hand against Brock right off the bat without knowing. Like, if you were at the arena that night, you would have – and you never watched UFC, you have no idea what's going on. Because – and especially without having any commentary, because you it's not even that you have the benefit of being at home and hearing, oh, well, them talk about, oh, this is Cain Velasquez. Okay, he came out to Rey Mysterio's music. It's not even like they debuted his music and had his name in big letters on the screen. Because then that would have been like, oh, okay, because even if you've never seen UFC, you may have heard this name out there before and in correlation with Brock especially. So they just needed to reorganize the debut and just when he did certain things, just for my liking at least.
Yeah, there could have been a little bit more of an organization to his debut rather than just having Ray introduce him. And I like him
coming out with Ray, but just like have him come out with his music. So at least people for that initial debut and that initial shock, it's not like, okay, why is Ray coming out? Like, Ray's going to beat up Brock now? And then you see who's with Ray. Like, and if you don't know who he is, you're like, okay, what's going on? Like, you can't even be excited or mad or whatever because you don't know what's going on.
Right. You have no idea. And yes, WWE at least educated the audience who may not have any idea who Cain Velasquez is, that he was in UFC with Brock. And like, I'm interested in this match, but I'm also kind of scared for this match in terms of quality. But the good thing for Cain Velasquez, even if he's limited in the ring, and from everything I'm hearing, he's actually pretty good. Even you confirm that. I just think that the Brock Lesnar style and length of match definitely benefits Cain Velasquez here because he doesn't have to have, you know, a 15-minute classic. It could be a 2-3 minute, you know, back and forth, kind of a slow-paced, big blows and, you know, punches that are pulled, all that kind of stuff. And I'm sure also the other interesting piece of this is that these two, and Brock Lesnar legitimately does not like Cain Velasquez and legitimately is burned by the night that he lost to him nine years ago or whatever it was. So you know that it's going to be tense in there, like legitimately, that Brock Lesnar has to pull these punches and, you know, there's going to be something in there that's like, you know, you wonder, like, is Brock going to just try to shoot one in there? Like, I mean, just because of the actual legitimate fight and tension that they had for a number of years and the matches that they had or the fights that they had in UFC. So I'm interested in this from this perspective of how does the crowd react to Cain Velasquez in Saudi Arabia, of all places? I don't even know if we should value that because that's bizarro world as far as, you know, everyone's concerned. And I don't know. I mean, so Crown Jewel isn't exactly a pay-per-view that people are excited about with all the dark clouds hanging over it from last year. But I don't know. I'm interested in the match. I don't know what the long-term plan is here for Kane.
Yeah, and two more real quick points before we move on from these two guys. I think it's actually smart for WWE to have this first match between the two of them because I'm not sure if you heard somewhere I read that they announced that he signed a multi-year deal, but he's guaranteed at least like four fights within like the next like certain amount of months. So I think it's smart for them to have him debut against Brock in Saudi Arabia because there's a few things that go into it, like the time of it. It's like at 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon on like a Thursday. So the majority of the people here I'm going to be watching it live, and the majority probably won't be watching it at all for various reasons. So it's kind of like a good match and a good setting for them to kind of get everything out, all aggression, whatever, stiff shots, whatever they want to do, and just get a feel for each other in this type of setting. So I think that that's kind of smart. And, man, kudos to Brock for actually letting them address the whole UFC stuff, like specifically bring up photos and just like zoom in on the scar that's on his face. Like I was wondering if they were actually going to say the words like out loud and they did. And he took it and he let them just well, let Heyman say everything. So I was surprised and kind of proud of him for doing that, because, you know, Brock, you hear different stories about Brock, and he didn't have to let them like go that into it. They could have just addressed that they have history and just, you know, moved on. But they got very specific and actually let us see the visual. So it was kind of cool.
It was, and it brought a lot of emotion to the story without even having to know the story. Like, I mean, I guess the thinking was, and smartly so by WWE creative and management, is that assume that none of the audience has seen Cain Velasquez. They don't know the history between these two. Let's educate them in a way that is very effective. It's a little bit graphic, but it's impactful. And that's exactly what they did. They told a story about these two who have had legitimate fights in the past in UFC, a legitimate scar left by Cain Velasquez on Brock Lesnar's face. I loved all of that. I mean, that's the way you do it when you're going to try to, on short notice, build a match like this for a B pay-per-view. This is not a pay-per-view of really any real substance other than, ooh, it's in Saudi Arabia, and that's pretty much it. I mean, so they did what they could. As you said, I would have probably debuted him a little bit better, give him his own music. I'm sure they will. But as far as the initial entrance, yeah, they probably could have done something a little bit better in terms of that. But yeah, as you said, moving on, kind of really shifting gears here to something that has been getting under my skin lately. And it's this whole Shorty Gable thing, right? Like, I mean, it's gotten to the point where Baron Corbin makes a joke of some sort of calling him, instead of Chad Gable, Shorty Gable. And then Mike Hamilton on the ring announcer, or whoever it was, ended up actually calling him that unannounced or unprovoked. And then he just changes his name to Shorty Gable as if he has no respect for his actual birth given name, and cowers anytime anybody says anything to him and puts his head down, you know, like he lost the softball game. I mean, like, he doesn't have – I feel like he needs to stand up for himself. And he says backstage, well, I don't care what you call me. You call me a winner. Like, really? You're not going to stand up for your birth-given name, you know, apparently. I mean, like, and I believe it is actually Chad Gable, but I just – this guy has no – he doesn't have a set when it comes to backstage or outside of when he's in the ring, and he puts on amazing matches. I love it. And I've spoken this guy's praises for weeks and weeks and weeks, but for him to just be okay with everybody suddenly calling him Shorty Gable I think it's detracting from his credibility and telling me he doesn't have a set. So I don't know. What do you think about this?
I feel like this was a backstage joke that is getting blown so far out of proportion. Like, I think this has got to be a joke. Like, this they can't think this is actually like a good idea. This has to be a joke, and this can't be something they're gonna actually do long term. When I saw them actually change his name on the screen as he was coming out to Shorty Gable on the graphic, I was like, oh, you've got to be – this guy is an Olympic medalist. Like, are you serious? Like, this would be like changing Kurt Angle to Shorty Angle. Like, are you – really? Like, out of all your athletes, out of all of them – and they are superb athletes, not taking anything away from any of them, but there's a few elite athletes that they have on the roster, and he is one of them, legit. So just to see the disrespect – and it's just the first week, fine, whatever, haha. Second week, all right, let's move on. And then just to see it continue on and on, it's just like, man, like, it's one thing for Baron Corbin to mock him and call him that. That's what heels, whether I agree with it or not, do in WWE. So fine, whatever. But for it to be taken to this point, for the announcer to be calling him Shorty Gable, for his graphic to be Shorty Gable, it's just like, come on, this guy is a legit athlete. And he's one of the wrestlers that you don't actually need a character for. You just let him go out there and be him. Like, he who himself is the character, an Olympic medalist, like a tough performer. Like, yeah, he's a little shorter, but fine, whatever. He let him go out there and prove why he, like, size doesn't matter, and like, it doesn't even have to be a thing. Like, his size wasn't a thing when he was in the Olympics. Like, his height, like, it shouldn't be a thing. So it's just absurd, man. I feel so bad for him.
I mean, I honestly don't even know what – I just don't understand the logic behind this. It never got any steam. People hated it in the way that's like kind of go away heat. Like, this is a terrible angle. It sounds a whole lot like Vince McMahon's brain when it comes to this kind of stuff, who I'm sure is not pleased with how short Chad Gable is. He's that's well documented that he doesn't think that those kinds of guys with that height are ever going to have a successful career. I mean, that just sounds like it's coming from the brain of Vince McMahon. And when you talk about guys that are successful that are have been Chad Gable's height or shorter, you talk about guys like Rey Mysterio. He's shorter than Chad Gable. You talk about Eddie Guerrero, same height as Chad Gable. Chris Benoit, right. An inch, maybe two, taller than Chad Gable. I mean, the list goes on of these guys that are ultra successful that have not even touched the 6 foot mark. It's just so short-sighted of them, and I guess not pun intended, but it's just like I don't know. It's really lowbrow. It's not good booking. It's not effective. It doesn't even get heel heat because the heat is on the company here. The heat's not on the wrestlers that call him short because every single person that ever came in contact with Chad backstage suddenly made all these puns about his height and everything.
Right.
Everybody, even the announcers, the ring announcer unprovoked did it, which was just asinine. I don't know. I mean, this kind of stuff is very sophomoric, I guess, and it doesn't do anything for Chad, who continues to just allow people to change his name at will and just go, call me whatever you want, but, you know, I'm a winner, yay. I mean, that's just no respect
one
for himself.
Match, like, recently against Baron, like it's not like he's been on this winning streak. Like, he's hit and miss. So it's just, I don't know. Like, he deserves so much more. And I'm pretty sure I told you one of the last times that we spoke, like when we were speaking about him, that he, like, the fans want to cheer him. He is so easy. When you were in that arena, he is such an easy guy to cheer for because the way, like, he just accelerates the match. Like, it's just amazing. Like, the build throughout and the pace is just, it's perfect. And he just feeds in and just generates that emotion from the crowd. And so, like, it's just that's why, for me, it's frustrating to see this stupid storyline. Just let him be him, man. Just let him go out there and just win matches.
Yeah, I really have nothing else to add to that. I'm just over it. I'm over kind of the Gable Corbin deal. I mean, they put on good matches, and I love seeing Chad Gable in the ring. I think he's a special talent when it comes to that. He's so smooth. He makes his opponent look good. He gets you involved. He brings you in emotionally every single time. I love Chad Gable's work. But anyway, moving on here. I do have to ask you, and this might be one of the last things I ask as far as the things on my list, but Aleister Black is one. And then the other thing is about Tyson Fury and Braun Strowman. What do you think about these two things?
Let's start with Aleister Black. I'm so at a loss for him. He's another one of those guys who has so much promise, and he was one of those stars in NXT who didn't need to be in the title picture, didn't even need to really be in a feud. He can just go out there and just have a good match. And I'll never forget the angle with him and Velveteen Dream, where Dream just week after week was going out there and begging him to just say his name. And just something as simple as that, and just seeing how well Aleister Black did for that storyline, and how well and invested he is in his character. Like, it was just so cool. And it was a dark character, but it wasn't like one that has like all the like hocus pocus and stuff like that. It was just this cool, edgy guy. And what they're doing with him now is just absurd. Like, he's one of those that needs a Paul Heyman to just sit down with him, get a good feel for his character, and just dedicate something meaningful to him.
Yeah,
it's just, I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, quickly on Aleister Black, like, I'm a fan of his work. I think that his entrance is unique. Him, you know, kind of rising up from the ground and, like, you know, he's in a coffin or something like that. That's cool. I mean, he's got a great cadence to his promos. The way he speaks is different. He's believable. He's intriguing. He makes you want to watch the screen. That's something that's hard to teach. All of that. But, yeah, I feel like they've kind of start and stopped Aleister Black a couple of times here. And, you know, they haven't done a whole lot with him other than Cesaro's the one that knocked on his door a couple of months ago.
And those were good matches.
Yeah, they were. And I don't know. I think there's a lot Aleister Black could do. And I don't know. I feel like they're not quite ready to pull the trigger on him. So I'm not going to be totally down on what they've done with him or will do with him, I should say. But the history does tell me that they're just kind of like, well, he's there.
And my thing is, that's fine if you don't really have anything for him right now. You shouldn't have brought him up when you did. You did not need to bring him up with Ricochet as a tag team. If you wanted Ricochet, you could have just brought Ricochet. They did not need to be a tag team. Like, if you didn't have any real idea, because it's obvious that Ricochet, they had some type of more of an idea for Ricochet than they did for Aleister Black, because Ricochet went into the U.S. title picture and actually had good, I'm not saying Aleister didn't have good matches, but Ricochet actually had a story. Aleister never really had a story, so it's clear that they really didn't have a vision for him going forward. So again, it's just another one of those guys, like, you didn't have to bring him up, especially now with NXT having their own show on USA. Like, he would have been a perfect fit for them at a time like this.
Yeah, I mean, just have him do what Finn Balor's doing. Go back to NXT.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
Really. So what do you think about Tyson Fury and Braun Strowman? I mean, my quick thoughts, like, I mean, I'm fine with it. I honestly am more interested, I think, in this in a little bit of a way than I am in Cain Velasquez, Brock Lesnar, because Tyson Fury actually looks like a legitimate, you know, athlete, a legitimate combat athlete that could take on Braun Strowman in a real competitive environment. Of course, this is not the competitive environment. This is WWE in Fantasyland. But I don't know what they're doing with Braun Strowman these days. He seems to be the guy that's involved in always these celebrity nonsensical storylines he has, or he just brings fans in to be his tag team partners, or he's, you know, involved in Saturday Night Live nonsense. I mean, like, I don't know what it is about Braun Strowman that attracts celebrities to him or these storylines to him that are never, I don't think, in most cases, done very well. If history is anything to look at here with WWE, anytime a celebrity is brought in, and this is the golden rule, for 99% of cases, except one or two that I can think of, and that is Kevin Federline and maybe who's the other guy? Mark Cuban. Yeah, I mean, when K-Fed
what a blast got, from the past.
Yeah. I mean, I'm honestly had to dig that far. When K-Fed got FU'd by John Cena, and then Mark Cuban got put through a table, outside of those two instances, I cannot recall any other celebrity involvement in WWE that didn't ultimately make the celebrity look like $1 million and the wrestler who's, you know, there day in and day out look like a complete fool. So I think it may be probably the latter. Probably WWE is going to bring in Tyson Fury, make him look legitimate, make Braun Strowman. I don't want to say he's not going to get squashed, but it's certainly not going to be what it probably should be, and that's Braun Strowman just putting this guy down. So the golden rule, I think, stands here.
Yeah, and I heard somewhere, I forget where, or maybe I read it somewhere, that Braun Strowman is turning into the next Big Show, which kind of was interesting to me, because if you think about it, it kind of makes sense. Like, the many turns, the involvement with celebrities, just the, like, of course, like, the destruction, like, the obnoxiousness of some things. It's just kind of interesting. But I'm a fan of Braun Strowman. I mean, not a super big fan, but I respect him. He's a very, like, insane athlete for a man of his size. Like, it's insane what he can do. I honestly don't know much about Tyson Fury, so I can't really make much judgment there. But he looks like a total bad dude. Like, I'm excited to see what kind of match that these guys put on. But then I kind of, as you were talking, I was kind of thinking about it. They have two either UFC or former UFC fighters or just boxers in general on the same card. So are they both going to go over? Are both WWE guys going to lose? Is one going to lose? And if so, who? Like, I don't know, does Tyson Fury lose to Braun Strowman? If not, then Brock is going to lose to Kane. It's just I'm curious to see which guy on either side, for that matter, takes the loss, or if both of them do.
Well, I would say, if I was going to guess, I mean, I don't know. I mean, these are two matches I would not put any money on, because there's a lot of ways they can go with this. I don't know. I mean, Cain Velasquez, from everything I heard, you heard, he's signed for a multi-year deal. Again,
and that's not for the title, right?
No, thank God.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
That would be no.
Okay.
I would not be speaking to you so
quietly.
Okay. No, it is not for the WWE Championship, and that's fine. I'm
fine. No, it
should
totally
be. Fine.
Yeah, it should not be.
No, I don't even want to go down that road. But with Cain Velasquez as signed for multi-year deal, again, that may mean, well, how many actual matches is he going to be in? As you said, maybe 4 or 5. I don't know. But if that's the case, and Tyson Fury is here for just a one-off, I would tend to believe that Tyson Fury gets the win over the Big Show, or over the Big Show. Now you got me thinking Big Show. A win over Braun Strowman, and we have Cain Velasquez lose to Brock Lesnar in some kind of form or fashion. Maybe it's some kind of cheap win by Brock to finally say he beat Cain Velasquez. If he's playing the heel here, and he is, clearly. So I think it's a cheap win over Cain Velasquez where Brock escapes, and maybe they escalate it from there. But I think Tyson Fury probably goes over based on the number of dates that each are signed to.
True. True. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. I don't know. We'll see. I think Tyson's going to do very well, though, and he's a great talker. So we'll see.
That's what I love. And what I love, too, one of the headlines, and this isn't really talked about, one of the headlines that Tyson Fury was quoted as saying that he's not here to be a role model. Something
yes.
along those lines. I'm like, that is effing awesome.
Yes.
Like,
thank you.
That,
finally,
that,
someone.
God, thank you. Like, and I'm sure WWE is probably like, oh, he'd never fit in here as a
right.
you know, a regular performer. Everybody here should want to be a role model. I mean, like, I love that is like the quote of the year for me. Like, because you never hear anyone say that. Everybody, whether even not in just even professional wrestling, you look
right.
at sports, you look at, I mean, entertainment as a whole, as an industry, everybody wants to try to be a role model. What about the person that just comes out and says, F it, I don't want to be a role model. Like, I prefer not to be a role model. Like, it's just awesome to me. Like, I love that true anti-hero. I mean, when he said that, he was not in wrestling. Like, he was still in boxing. Like, that is awesome. So, like,
oh,
Tyson.
Oh, no.
What's up?
So, I hope you're sitting down. So.
Oh, God.
As I was asking you if it was for the title, I was wondering, I was like, oh, what date is it on and what time is it? Why on WWE.com does it say that Brock Lesnar will defend his title against former UFC champion Cain Velasquez? It's for the freaking title.
I'm going to type this up. Hold on.
Good. It's on their website. Go to WWE.com.
All right. I'm on WWE.com. I see Randy Orton.
And check the graphic for him. Like, that doesn't even look like him, like Cain. Just throwing that out there.
Oh my God.
It's for the
this is no.
it's
no,
for
it's
the title.
Not.
Oh
Why?
My gosh.
How is this for the championship? What, like, this doesn't make sense. They were
How does this guy deserve
again,
a title shot?
And again, this just goes back. Not only is this guy new to the company, not only has he never had a match on WWE television, again, probably in the Performance Center, fine. He has never had a match in front of a live audience that's televised in a WWE-style match. And furthermore, this just goes to show you of WWE's constant philosophy and flawed thinking of just attack the champion and you get a championship match. That is the most flawed, backwards ass way to think of how anybody gets a match for anything. All you gotta do, just attack the champion if you want a match. That's it. So you have massive cardinal sins going on here for a guy that has zero WWE credentials, walks in off the street from a UFC octagon, which again, mass credentials there, but you can have somebody come in as an outsider, attack the champion, and then instantly get a WWE championship match, get rewarded with a WWE championship match in his first match on the stage of a pay-per-view in Saudi Arabia in front of 50,000 people. This is shit. This is what this is. Like, that is, it's garbage. So I will just say that. Maybe I'll tag that for edit. I don't know, but those are my thoughts. What do you think?
I think it's best that I just agree with you here, because then you really will have to mark for edit. I was just checking, so I had this fancy little watch that I got a few months ago. I was just checking my heart rate to see if it went up from the last time I checked it, and it did. I am so
like
speechless in a proper way.
Yep.
In a PG way, I'm speechless. And I think I'm so mad right now because something is just screaming at me that Kane is going to win the freaking title. Because why not? The Saudi Arabia is going to want this huge, big moment. And they can create a storyline going on after that. Brock Lesnar can't beat Kane. And then he could regain the title somewhere in America or wherever, back on this side of the world. But
I see no scenario in this human world, zero, there's zero reasons, zero storyline you could sell me that would convince me to have Cain Velasquez win the WWE Championship, a championship that is the most prestigious in the entire company.
It's the WWE title. It's not even the Universal title. No. It's the WWE title.
Guys that scratch and claw to be there, that should get a championship opportunity. Guys even like, and I didn't like him as champion, but guys like Kofi Kingston, who are there for 11 years, don't get a championship match, finally climb the mountain and get it. Guys that are going through Performance Center to get them on live TV, to get them to NXT, to get them up to the main roster, to get them noticed on the main roster, to get them in mid card to upper card, to get that championship match. That path is now superseded by Cain Velasquez, who gets on the pay-per-view card into a pay-per-view, a major pay-per-view event in Saudi Arabia, and in this championship match for the most prestigious belt the WWE has to offer, and then make us believe that he could potentially win is just asinine. You cannot have the Cain Velasquez win under any circumstance. He could win the match, maybe by disqualification, but he cannot win the championship under any scenario because A, that number one, I don't want to lose my voice. B, I do not need the championship being devalued by a guy that has zero credentials in WWE itself. Zero and anything. He has shown me nothing. I have zero respect for him as a WWE performer. As a man and as an athlete, yes. But as a performer, zero. And then you talk about having the fans' resentment. You would have the fans explode, I think, in a negative way against Cain Velasquez if they have him win that belt here. So, again, I would say there's zero next to zero chance, maybe a 1% chance of Cain winning here. But, my God, if they do.
Oh, if they thought the backlash from Hell in a Cell was bad, if Kane wins, just wait for them to get back over to this side of the world and people who actually care about WWE and the storylines and what goes on and not just handpick people from a pool or whatever. Like, just wait. Like, it's just – and, like, just thinking back, like, of all the legends and the Hall of Famers who were never WWE champion, people like Roddy Piper – we're never WWE champion. If this guy becomes champion, I don't know. I think I may need to take a break. I think I may need to just I can't. I don't know. I don't know. Is, like, you're just killing you're killing it.
What makes it the worst? I mean, like, the thought of him winning the WWE championship is just awful. I mean, like, I don't even want to go there, but hoping that I won't have to. But it's enraging that he even gets a WWE championship match. Like, that is what makes it the most – like, that is so enraging to me. And it's flat-out disrespectful to the championship. It's flat-out disrespectful. I mean, like, think about the guys that have held that belt and what it meant to them to carry the company after being there and being the good soldier and coming on the scene and maybe getting yourself over after years of blood, sweat, and tears, that old thing. But to have a guy walk in and just be granted a championship match on his first televised match in WWE for the top belt that they have, that's called a perfect way to cause or create resentment among fans if you're trying to get him over as a babyface. And I have nothing more to say.
And one last thing, if we're sitting here, again, if we are buying into and supposed to be emotionally invested into storylines and championship matches and who should be contenders for the title, if let's just go back to the last storyline. Let's just go back to the former champion, Kofi Kingston. The amount of gauntlet matches and matches in and of itself that he had to go through just to get an opportunity to become the champion is insane. Like, I can't even remember how many matches he had to back to back that he had to go through to even get the opportunity to get a title shot. And for this guy to just come in out of nowhere, it's absurd. It's BS. It's We need to move on.
I mean, if you do the logic backwards and you have a WWE person go into another sport, or if you have somebody from, let's say, the NFL that wants to go to the MLB, you don't immediately, like, what's his name? Tim Tebow. Who went from the NFL to the minor leagues of
and
the
worked
Mets,
his way up.
Which is where he should be. Even though he was a star in the NFL, it doesn't mean he instantly gets to just jump to the top and, oh, guess what? You're on the starting roster today for the major league. That's not how life works. So this is just ridiculous. I was fine with just a street fight or just a non-title match. But this is just
it's so crazy.
This is nonsensical crap. I mean, so all right. Well, Ashley, do you have anything else? And maybe hopefully no more breaking news stories. My heart can't handle it.
I know. No, I'm not going back on my phone for the rest of the night. I'm done.
Please don't.
No. I'm done. I think we should be done.
please. I need. I'm gonna have like a meditation session, set up some candles or something.
Oh my God.
But before you go, of course, let everyone know you have another podcast that you do and where they can find that and your Twitter.
Oh, I do. My other show is called Wrestle Rewind. We are live every Thursday at 8:30. Streaming on Facebook for a video feed. We are released immediately following that feed, about an hour and a half afterwards, maybe. On any podcasting networks, apps that you have, the Apple Podcast, Spotify, all that good stuff. So just check out Wrestle Rewind if you'd like, and feel free to follow me on Twitter. I'm at @ashmanns.
All right. Very good. And, Ashley, thanks for coming on and, elevating my heart rate. And
I'm sorry.
Because if you didn't do it and I didn't have an outlet for it, I probably would have just
I'm glad we went through this together, though.
Yes.
So thank you.
It was a shared experience, and I again, I probably would have not taken that out in a healthy way, so I have someone to bounce it off of. So
exactly.
thanks so much, Ashley, for coming on. And as always, we'll talk soon. 3 weeks goes by quick.
It does. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye. Good night.